punk and the schooner, no one is punk.
Yes, indeed. Show number 31 of Noise Punk and Dust Crooner. I am Dust Crooner. Gene, who in God's name are you?
Yo, I am Noise Punk. This is show number 31, and we got 31 shows.
Yeah.
Well, where do we get 31 shows? You came over here 31 times.
Yeah, apparently.
You're only renting shit.
Yeah.
All right. This is. We got a very special guest, the composer.
But we always say that we have a special guest, but it just happens that we have another. Okay, did I just give
that away?
We
actually have a special guest.
Yes.
So, Dust Crooner today has not had his vitamins.
Yeah,
his
that's
head
it.
Is twice as big as it usually. So, we have a special guest, Charles.
James Cone, the great American composer from Newark. Welcome.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
We have a special bonus. James brought it along. Aileen, his wife.
Aileen.
Right? I'm sorry.
Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Okay, it's official. We've now covered that.
Now
case.
It's official. Okay. Charles is going to ask his question that usually insults anybody who comes.
I don't think it really insults.
It insults me, Charles.
Yeah, it insults you because you got a
anytime you speak.
Ego the size of California, this guy here. Obvious question. What made you want to write? Obvious question.
It just gave me. I thought it might be a good thing to do.
Well, that's a good answer.
That's a brilliant answer.
Yeah. I came from a family where my mother wanted to be a performer. She wanted to sing. She came from a family with a father who thought that a woman should just stay in the kitchen and cook. And in between, when she was not busy cooking, she should bear children, and that was all he thought.
I like this guy.
He thought that was all that a woman should do.
I joke.
The Germans had an expression: Kirche, Küche und Kinder, church, cooking, and children. That's all a woman should do.
Church.
Yeah.
You mean they let her out?
Well, my mother was very, and also my mother's father said, take long walks with your mother and then get married.
So, that's some Freudian stuff going on there.
Well, my mother did not feel the same way. She went to high school. One of her friends at high school was a viola player named Lillian Fuchs.
Oh, yeah.
And they were friends, and then basically, when I was old enough, my mother wanted me to have some music, so I had piano lessons and violin lessons. The violin lessons were from Lillian Fuchs.
Oh, wow.
And,
hello.
I was holding the violin, and my left hand would go down. She said, hold up your left hand. She says, hold up the violin. Hold up. Left hand up. So that was my most important musical instruction from Lillian Fuchs.
Left hand up.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And I can see how that will help you in composing music, too. Because if you compose with your left hand down, you know, half the page is missing. I don't know what I'm saying.
What the hell are you talking about?
Well, the left hand was for the fingering.
Oh, yes.
The right hand was for bowing.
I know.
So,
yeah,
actually,
I hope so.
If I had not been so attentive to following instructions, my right hand would have gone down. I would have wound up playing the cello or the double bass.
Yeah, right.
Oh. And we definitely don't need more of those.
Yes. Oh, they don't get enough concertos. So
the world needs more bass players and players on all of the other instruments.
Like the zither.
Like the zither, the viola.
Zither is good also, especially if you want to hear the third man theme.
The third man theme.
The movie.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, right.
Charles knows movie music. I'm not a big movie.
Yeah.
So James was nice enough to bring a lot of CDs. And he's recorded on many CDs.
And you just came out with a new release on Naxos, two of your symphonies, correct?
Yes.
Should we just hear a symphony? Are you into a symphony? Or maybe a movement? I mean, they're like long. They're like half an hour long.
Yeah. I would suggest to keep the audience awake.
Exactly, yes.
The second movement from the second symphony.
Perfect.
I have it right here. I have it already in the computer. Second movement from the second symphony, 1949. Opus 13.
I was a student at Juilliard when I wrote that. That was part of my graduation thesis.
I read the program notes. And I did my homework.
On occasion.
I recommend the second movement because it will either wake up the audience or it will keep them awake.
It will keep them awake. Great. Usually, I let Charles Coleman do the announcing since I don't really like reading.
Yes.
No, I joke. I like reading, not out loud. And I like to see him mess up. This is fun. Watch.
This is typical, Gene. Second movement of Symphony No. 2 by our guest James Cohn here on Noise Punk and Das Kruner.
Who's playing? You didn't say anything. There's an orchestra playing.
Actually, it's Eastern Europe, which have a great technique for new music. Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra. Oh, great. He brought this to me so I can pronounce the conductor's name.
Yay, Charles.
Vakhtang
Jordania.
Jordania.
You helped him. That's not fair.
Thank you.
who was born in Georgia, in European Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And
wrong Georgia.
And he studied under, I forget which conductor, it's probably in the bio there.
Yeah.
But one of the best Soviet conductors. And I forget.
Probably, we'll look it up while we're listening.
Anyway, he had a superb education. He was a wonderful conductor. And that's it. That's
all right,
it.
So here.
Let's do it.
Second number two. Sorry, Symphony number two.
He says second number two. Charles Bessel, he's good. Right.
Here on Noise Punk and Das Kruner.
Thank you.
The Presto Movement, the second movement of Symphony No. 2 by our guest James Cohn. That was the Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra with Kirk Trevor conducting. We were mistaken about who was conducting. In fact, it was Kirk Trevor.
Trevor, you messed it all up, Charles.
Yeah, I did. I tend to do that.
Charles.
Fantastic orchestra out there. I love the fact that I noticed that no matter what happens, it's funny how that movement ended in F. It kind of revolved around G. Am I right about that?
Yes.
Yes, that's
the first movement was an F minor.
Ah.
And also the last movement is an F. But this second movement starts and ends in G.
There you go. And yet it ends on an F chord, which is kind of, I don't know whether it was your kind of subtle way of wanting to maintain the main note of the whole symphony. Was that something you were thinking when you wrote that?
No,
or?
Actually, when I wrote it, I called the title of the entire thing Symphony in F. And it was first performed in Brussels, and the music critic there said, "Why in F?"
Okay.
But since I was not there to answer his question, he asked it in print, and he was in Brussels and I was in the U.S., I never had a chance to answer his question.
Well, there you go.
And let's answer it right now. Because!
Because! That's the answer.
Who cares?
Yeah.
What do you... There's 12 notes and even more in the middle. What do you care?
I don't know if that was what you were thinking, but... let's talk a little bit about the orchestra that just played here, the Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra. How did that relationship... This was recorded back in 2001. How did that happen?
Well, I...
The press record, Charles.
I had some money saved up, and I wanted to make some recordings, and I knew that if I paid for it to be recorded in the United States... it would be something like $50 or $100 or $200 a minute.
Yeah.
But if I went to Europe, and I went to a place like Latvia or Slovakia, their union scale, for example, in Riga, Latvia, is $2 a minute.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
I
figured if I could have. I had to get what I could afford. And as long as I had wonderful musicians, it really did not matter to me whether we recorded in Europe or in the United States. I would love to record in the United States, but union scale is relatively high. And then decisions that are made by executives are very, very conservative. So I knew that I did not have any kind of a chance or a prayer of getting a hearing in the United States. So I decided I have saved up money from my retirement, money that I from working from years in an office. I would spend it over there.
Yeah. And then years later, after initially when you made the initial recording, how did Naxos get a hold of it and release it as a commercial CD? It just came out this year. How did that happen?
At this point, I really don't know. I think I would have to ask my wife.
Well, let's have the
wife.
Let's go to the wife. Yes, please, please. Yes, please.
Jeff James.
We love Jeff James.
Yes. Is a champion of Jim's music and has tried to tell all interested parties, all musicians about Jim's music, and had been in contact with Naxos and told them how he feels about this gentleman's output, and Naxos apparently was interested enough to take on this project, and so they released it.
That's fantastic.
Go Jeff!
Yes, nothing like an important supporter, and it's great to know that you know the more the particulars and the composer. All he has to do is worry about writing the darn music. Isn't that...
Yeah. Charles, stop cursing.
Darn! As you notice, we're a couple of idiots here, so...
Let's hear some more music, because I don't have to hear Charles talk so much.
Yes. Speaking of output, we should take advantage of the... I think we have a series of concertos and tone poems.
I'm going to read out the concerto.
All right.
I would suggest a piano concerto.
All right.
Should we play the whole thing? It's about 14 minutes. That's fine.
I would suggest at least the first movement.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It's about 15 minutes, which would be nice to...
The first movement is not that long.
No, I'm saying the whole concerto is 15 minutes.
If you've got the time.
We do have the time.
I think it would be nice to like just give the audience a little... a full piece beginning to end.
Which is only a nibble in an otherwise bigger feast of a CD that you have.
So Charles, that's beautiful.
I thought it was good.
Charles, you're a poet.
Give me that.
And you don't even know it.
You, thank you.
All so, right. Why don't you read something about the city, and then we'll put it...
What? All right.
Tell him what's happening.
What's happening here is that it's we're going to hear a three movement concerto for piano and orchestra, Opus 79, written in 2000, with the soloist Miriam Conti. Is she Italian or
Argentina?
It's
an Italian family that settled in Argentina a few generations ago.
Hmm. Oh, there you go. Oh,
they're tango people who are the mafia.
Her father is a very famous painter.
Oh yeah,
Raul Conti. He has a sense of humor. It looks a little bit abstract, but it has humor in there.
That's great.
If as a painter, he is the equivalent of the Mexican composer Carlos Chavez.
Sure.
Conti is the Argentine equivalent in pictures of Chavez.
There you go. Yeah, it's a. Well, Chavez is one of my favorites. He wrote a few good symphonies himself.
The Sinfonia India is my favorite.
Wonderful piece, yes. There's a story on how much Chavez and Revueltas had a bit of a unique relationship together in terms of their how much they hated each other.
You're a little gossip, aren't you?
Yeah, we'll talk about this off air, but I've heard some stories about that. But let's, in the meantime.
Charles subscribes to the Inquirer.
Yes.
Why do minds want to know?
I want to know.
Concerto
for piano and orchestra by our guest James Cohen, again featuring Miriam Conti, the soloist, along with the Latvian National Symphony Orchestra.
And the reason I wrote it
is
because she said, I want you to write a piano concerto for me.
That's pretty straight
ahead. Isn't that a great reason?
you can't misunderstand that.
Yeah. And conducted by Vakhtang Jordania. What?
Pretty good, Charles, yeah.
Here on Noise Punk and Das Crooner. We'll be right back. The Concerto for Piano and Orchestra, Opus 79, by our guest James Cohn, here on Noise Punk and Das Kruner. That was piano soloist Miriam Conti, along with the Latvian National Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Vakhtang Jordana.
Yeah. And
thank you, Gene, for that enthusiasm.
We got a little tango going on, a little tango in here. We're dancing here. Charles, put your shirt back on.
All right. Yes,
Charles, sir. Put your clothes back
on.
Yeah,
whatever you say,
it's
Gene.
Just a tango. Doesn't mean you have to get naked.
I can't.
He gets naked at every
whoop,
dance.
Let me get that back up. Okay, it's back
Charles
on.
Charles asked James. James has a CD with some Gershwin arrangements. Now, usually, of course, we play the music of the composer, but Charles really likes Gershwin.
Well, I really like certain Gershwin in particular.
Charles
three...
is gay for Gershwin.
Yeah.
That's all I'm trying to say.
Whatever. Gay in the jolly sense, you know, in the 19th century when
that's
they
what
was
I meant,
called
jolly sense.
Thank you, Gene. For years, I've always wanted to orchestrate the three piano preludes, but of course, this bastard beat me to it.
But since Charles doesn't know how to orchestrate.
Shut up! Maybe I don't orchestrate like you. Are you sure you're not looking in the mirror when you say that? Anyway.
Who's the greatest orchestrator alive?
Charles Colbert.
Hey, come on. Come on.
Gene Pritzker.
Thank you.
All right. That's right.
And the applause.
Okay. Okay, I think Dave Jameson's in shock right now.
He just doesn't like you.
What? Thank you, Gene. How did this come about, the orchestration of the three preludes? Was this for John Manassi?
It was my idea.
Yes.
That I wanted him to be able to do the three Gershwin piano preludes, so I made the arrangement for him for clarinet and string orchestra. I just thought it would be great for him to do it.
Mm.
He is a phenomenal clarinetist. I heard him first doing the I forget. I've known him since he was 19 years old.
Right.
A phenomenal musician. He studied with David Weber, who was a very, very tough person to study with. And when John started studying with him, John was only 9 years old. And Weber did not want to teach anybody that young. But the man in the music store picked up the telephone while John was trying out a saxophone. Mm-hmm. And he said, David, I have a kid trying out a saxophone. I think you should try him out on clarinet. And David Weber says, what are you talking about? You know I don't deal with kids or children or what have you. And the man behind the counter said, I know that, but he is that good. I think you should listen to him and so forth. And,
that's cool.
Yeah.
John went to study with him, and Dave Weber was a very tough teacher, and John cried a number of times, but he said he wanted to keep on studying with David Weber no matter what, and that was the result.
And now he's got a CD with your arrangements.
Well, with at least one of them.
Well, what I did is I believed in John and I wanted him to do the Gershwin piano preludes.
Yeah.
So I decided to make this arrangement, got permission to do it, and we recorded him.
And the rest is history. Yes, you want to say, Mrs. Oh, okay, never mind.
Do you want to say something?
Please. Oh, off air. Never mind. Okay. It must be something personal.
We'll have to tell you later.
We'll talk.
Going to tell Charles that his zipper is undone.
What are you talking about? On that happy note, well, let's hear this. This is John, how's it, Manassi?
Manassi.
Manassi, along with the XLNT Sinfonietta of this arrangement of the Gershwin Three Piano Preludes, orchestrated by our guest, James Cohn, here on Noise Punk and Das Kruner.
Das Kruner!
Thank you.
the three piano preludes. Actually, as you notice, you did not hear a piano there, but that was only because you heard actually the orchestration of the three piano preludes by our guest, James Cohen.
That was a real roundabout way of getting to that.
Yeah. Whatever. You can hold on to that. And that was the clarinetist John Manassi, along with the XLNT Sinfonietta in performance.
I just gotta say something.
What?
I had like five beers, and I like Gershwin, and I'm liking it.
Yeah. Oh God.
It's drunk night at Noise Punk and Dust Crew Studios. We got James Gong. We got his lovely wife.
Yes, of course.
And we got Charles Coleman, who's not as lovely as anybody.
Well, that's your problem. But
no,
what do you know?
Charles,
anyway,
that's your problem.
James, one question.
Okay, we're Charles now.
All right. one thing I'd like to touch on is the fact that you studied with one of the greatest American composers of the early 20th century, Roy
Bella
Harris.
Bartok?
American composer.
He lived on 57th Street? Come on.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm just playing. Steve Harris. I mean, not...
Roy Harris.
Steve Harris is the bassist from Iron Maiden. I got him confused. I'm
whatever.
Sorry.
Anyway.
Roy Harris.
How did that come about? Where did you meet? Was that in a conservatory, or did you study privately with Roy Harris? Or?
I believe I studied privately with him. And he was teaching up at Cornell University for a while. Mm-hmm. And I don't recall how I got to study with him. The circumstances, but I did study with him, and he took me on, and he gave me a basic training. He had me studying various church modes, and he felt that I was weak on modal music. On harmony and counterpoint, he didn't have any problems with me, but he felt that I should be more sensitized to modes, so he gave me various exercises to do in various modes like Locrian and Mixolydian and all of these various things.
Of course. Right.
So I did these exercises, and I really had no idea that they were very important, but I did what I was told, and I eventually...
In those days, you'd better.
And I eventually went on to study with other people, and that was that.
Yeah. I mean, Roy Cohen. It's funny. Aaron Copland is credited for having invented this Americana style that we grew up with. But I dare say that Roy Cohen may have come up
with
it.
Roy Cohen.
Roy Cohen. Oh, sorry, I am losing my mind. Roy Harris, James Cohen.
You have already lost.
All right. It was Roy Harris.
Charles has gotten electric chop sheet
since he was.
Weeks.
Thank you. Yes, that's it. See, Gene has explained it.
Pills are not working.
Thank you, but it was Roy Harris that, in fact, since he was older than Copland, I dare say that he was the one that really came up with it first, but I think it was Aaron Copland that made it, quote, famous. Do you think I'm in the ballpark? Do you have a theory on that?
So, he thinks you're insane.
Roy Harris was a man who was very good at promoting himself. He was mostly, so far as I could figure out, he was really largely self-taught, and he got by, I think, by his manner, and he was a good salesman and promoter, and I don't believe that he really had a very strong personality musically.
No.
The strongest thing about his career was his Third Symphony.
Yes,
which was,
yeah.
And that is a very strong and powerful work.
Right.
The later works, I think, were let's just say, they were not up to that level.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Yes. James
Charles
Cohen has confirmed it.
Charles likes gossip. Charles gossip.
Yes.
Now he's going to go around telling everybody that Roy Harris is that personality.
Well,
he takes a pee.
Shut up. Yes, you were saying. Yeah.
He was, as a human being, he was not exactly a pussycat.
You see, that's very... You see, there you go, right there. So.
That's not a pussycat.
Whatever, Gene.
That's what... Close. I got close.
We should go on to a Song of the Waters, a tome poem for...
Song of the Waters? Wait, say that again.
Shut
Song
up.
Song of the Waters. I got okay. Water.
Tell us about this work.
This is actually a set of variations on the folk song Shenandoah.
Ah.
Oh.
All right.
I know that one.
And it was written in memory of a dear friend. And the work is dedicated to her memory. This was a lady that I met before I met Eileen. She was very nice to me. It was not a what you would call a romantic involvement. She was like a sister to me. She was a very sweet and decent person.
There you go.
And I like Charles and Me, which is a romantic role.
Yeah, yes, of course.
I just like to point that out. Sorry.
Yeah. We need the publicity. Thank you. Another point. Let's take a listen.
Okay,
once again, this is the Latvian National Symphony Orchestra under the baton of Vangtang Jordana.
Jordania.
How many times are you going to mess up the man's name?
Every time. Here on Noise, Punk, and Das Crooner.
Charles is...
Thank you.
A Song of the Waters, Opus 53, tone poem for orchestra by our guest James Cohen. James Cohen, I shouldn't say. I almost said Cohen, as in the lawyer.
James, before we go on to the next piece, and we want to get one more piece.
Before we go, it was the Latvian National Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Vakhtang Jordania. Be natural. What of it?
You interrupted me.
Yes.
You will be punished.
No, don't.
I see the Opus numbers. How many Opus numbers do you have? How many pieces do you have?
Right now, I'm up to around 100.
100. And you are...
I am 80 years old.
80 years old. You read my mind.
80 years young.
80 years young.
Yes. Yeah, official. Fantastic.
That's nice. 100. Cool.
Yeah, really nice of you to talk about people's age, man.
No, I was just asking...
Like, whatever.
The man...
Blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Wrote 1.3 pieces a year throughout his life or something.
Yeah.
My math is not that good, but something like that, right?
Yes.
I never figured it out. I woke up one morning and there I was.
Exactly.
See, that's the best way to put it.
I woke up with a hangover one morning, and there I wasn't. All right, let's play one more piece.
quick,
one more piece.
I thought we'd end with the homage, Opus 31. Some of you wrote in 1959. You want to talk about this?
Yes. Two of my friends had been refugees from Europe during the Second World War. The husband was born in Danzig, and the wife was born in Warsaw. The wife wound up in a concentration camp, and she managed to escape from it found her way to her married sister in Brazil. Mm. She was a concert pianist.
Wow.
Her name was Marilla Jonas. Mm. She was a pupil of, among others, Paderewski and Emil von Sauer.
Huh.
She was a phenomenal pianist. She had a contract in the United States with Columbia Records. I think David Oppenheim signed her.
Right.
And when I met her through her husband, who happened to be a physician, and I was suffering from a skin condition, which eventually turned out to be a vitamin deficiency.
Yeah.
And he cured me. Also, he was interested in me because I was a musician. He wanted to know what kind and so forth. He said he decided to introduce me to his wife, and she asked me to write some little miniatures. All of her friends were Polish friends were all composers, and they all wrote little music box pieces. Yeah. So she asked me to write a little music box piece for her. I wrote one for her, and I could not stop because I was I thought so highly of her. So I wrote not one miniature, but a set of 9 of them. Mm. And I played them for her, and she said she was going to perform them. And she also asked me if I would, when she was going to go on tour, would I write a sonata for her? And so I wrote a piano sonata for her also. She did not live to play it. She had been suffering from an ailment, a virus infection, which she had picked up while in Brazil, and she eventually passed away because of it.
Wow.
And that's when I wrote a piece in her memory. And that's my set of variations on The Wayfaring Stranger, because she passed away from a heart attack while recovering from this. And then her husband, who had developed a heart condition, he passed away about 5 or 6 weeks later. So I wrote this set of variations in their memory.
Great.
The variations are on the song The Wayfaring Stranger. The first verse is, I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger that's traveled through this world of woe, and there's no grief, sickness, or danger in that bright land to which I go.
Right.
And it's a set of 12 variations.
This homage piece that we're talking about.
Homage. Madame Jonas and her husband were very, very interested in politics, considering their history and everything.
Right.
And when they heard that John Foster Dulles was in his last illness and was probably not going to survive much longer, they asked me to write a piece and send it to him to express our respect and love for all of the good that he had done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wrote this piece, and I called it homage, but it was an homage to John Foster Dulles, and right. I just called it homage. And because of the nature of the piece, it also includes quotations from the national anthem.
You know, I was listening to it the other day. I put it because I had the CD before, and I was listening, and all of a sudden, the national anthem hit me like, what's happening here?
And also, the mood in there, it expresses the turbulence of the times, the antagonisms, the distrust, all the political flurries that were going on at that time. And that's why I wrote the piece that way. Eventually, it had its first performance in a community orchestra in Southern Ohio.
Right.
And they performed it on United Nations Day.
There you go.
Cool.
Well, how appropriate.
Now that you've set it up, I think the audience wants to hear what's going on. Yeah.
We should mention that most of what we've been hearing the last few pieces have been recorded on an album titled James Cohen Concertos and Tone Poems, featuring the Latvian National Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Vakhtang Jordanio.
I'd also like to say that perhaps the vitamin condition that your friend had might be also responsible for some of Charles's behavior.
See, I knew you were going to say that. Whatever.
Perhaps vitamins will cure you, Charles.
Pop!
Thank you.
optimistic or somewhat convoluted ending right there, especially with that gong. Holy crap. That was the the homage, Opus 31, by our guest James Cohn. That was the, we heard, I said Cohn. Stop correcting me, you moron. Latvian National Symphony Orchestra under the baton of Vagtang Jordania.
Kong.
Whatever. Anyway, so listen, thank you for having us over.
Thank you very much for being here.
Have coming
and
over.
People, if you want to visit James Cohn's website, well, I don't think he has a website, but Jeffrey James, our good friend, has a website called
James Arts.
JamesArts.com. And there he has a list of all his composers that he represents, including James Cohn. And you know, JamesArts.com. And you could listen, I think, to probably more of your music there, or and buy CDs, get directed to where you could purchase CDs.
And I should point out that some of what we just heard was from a recently new release CD of his two symphonies, number 2 and number 7, released on the Naxos record label. In fact, got a pretty good review on Classics Today, I think I read. Got it, like, think in the upper echelon of its numeric review. So I think, obviously, you should get it because it's worth your time, doggarn it.
Charles, stop cursing.
Yes, sir.
Really, this is ridiculous.
Let's talk about let's talk a little bit of what's coming up next for you. First of all, what are you writing right now?
Right now, I just got a commission, which is for a group in Chicago. It's a quintet. It's a soprano, singer, and flute, violin, viola, and piano.
In case you're wondering, the wife is dictating to make sure he's got the instrumentation right.
She's just hoping that I remember everything.
Yes.
And fortunately, I'm doing okay today because I did have enough coffee for breakfast.
Thank God. Thank goodness.
But Charles certainly did not have enough vitamins.
Shut up already.
I think it's the vitamins. Charles, I'm going to look into this.
Okay, yes,
James,
sir.
James turned me on to the vitamin idea.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very, very much, both of you, both
Mr. and Mrs. James Cohn. Thank you for being on.
For being the show. And here comes the theme music.
That's the one. That's the one.
We love it.
And until next time, noise to you.
Noise Punk and the Schooner. Noise.